today on the TV Time Machine, we welcome actor and comedian John DiDomenico. Mr. DiDomenico is an Emmy-nominated impersonator seen regularly on The Conan O'Brien Show, and most recently has been voted the world's number one Donald Trump impersonator. Over the next segment, John DiDomenico will talk about being the nation's comedian-in-chief and how the election of President Trump has changed both his career and his life. Again, for those of you intrepid enough to listen to our tremendous program, feel free to comb your hair as we create a resistance to the past in order to make America great again in the present. John, thank you for coming on board the TV Time Machine.
It's so great to be on the show. Very excited.
Now, you're the number one Donald Trump impersonator in the entire world. So
I have told you.
So what events in your career led to you becoming the number one Trump impersonator?
Just sheer talent. Just sheer unadulterated talent. Well, I've been doing Trump since 2004. So I've got a really long runway of doing Trump. I've actually... done a couple of feature back before he announced it. I'd done some feature films as him and tons of voiceovers and commercials and hundreds of live appearances. So and then when he announced it, all that just went crazy. So I was in the right place at the right time as an actor who does this particular character. This person, I call it a character because when I do him, I'm acting. I try not to do an impersonation. I try to play him.
So when he announced for president that he was running for president, what was going through your mind? And during the campaign, was there a moment when you thought that all of this really could turn into something really bigly?
When he announced, I was cautious because he had, in the last election cycle, 4 years before, he was touring with the idea and he dropped out. And so I didn't get my hopes up too much. Then when he made the announcement, I was like, okay, all right, he's made the announcement. Let's see how far it goes. Then he made the John McCain statement. You know, I like my heroes not to get caught. Remember he said that?
Right.
I don't like them getting caught. And I thought, well, that was a good month run. Well, that's right. Pretty good. You know, I really thought it was over. And then his numbers started going up and up and up. And I thought, you know what? If he can make it to the first debate, I'm set for the fall. Because
right.
I had bookings already coming in. That'll really kind of solidify it. And as we all know, that very first debate, he crushed it because he said anything he wanted. He had no voting record, so he could say anything. And it was just from there, it was like boom, boom, boom. And I was on the road performing by this time pretty regularly, and I was amazed by how many people were for Trump. I would do 500 people, 1,200 people, 1,500 people, 2,000 people, and these audiences were all for Trump. And these were corporate audiences, and sometimes they were public audiences, but they weren't necessarily there as Trump people. But you could just tell in the response in the crowds, it was overwhelming for Trump, because I would always say, who here is going to vote for me? You know, and crazy Latin, who's going to vote for Hillary Clinton? Like four people, unenthusiastically. And I had said on British television, on Channel 4, in August of 2016, they'd asked me, do you think who do you think will win? I said, Donald Trump in a landslide. I said, really? And I said, yeah, I've been on the road now for over a year, and I'm seeing this groundswell of enthusiasm for him and this lack of enthusiasm for Hillary. And he won. He really won. He really captured people's imagination.
So you weren't surprised when he won, but were you surprised at how many people were surprised?
I was. I have to tell you something. Because of what I do, I work with a couple of different news organizations because I supply The Voice for Trumpcast and things like that. And I've had the opportunity to meet some reporters and people who are connected in the news world. And I would say to them, I'd say, you know, he's going to win. And they would say, no, he's not going to win.
Right.
He's not going to win. I said, no, he's going to win. I'm there. I'm on the ground. I'm doing this almost every single day. And they said, John, that's anecdotal. And I said, okay, it's anecdotal. It's not scientific, but I'm telling you, I have people whispering in my ear. I have CEOs of major corporations. I would do very large events. They would lean into my ear and say, I'm voting for you. And I'm not him. Right. But, you know, but that was the other thing that happened. People were treating me as this avatar of Trump.
Right.
Good and bad, but mainly it was, so I would hear I would do trade shows, hundreds of people, hundreds would line up to take a photo with me as Trump, and they would all have a comment, like, I'm voting for you, my wife hates you, people would say, I'm voting for you, and no one knows it. And I heard that a lot.
Right.
I heard that a lot. And when in the news, that thing creeped up where people said, well, maybe there was a lot of people who didn't tell the pollsters who they were voting for. That was a real thing. Because these weren't just, these weren't people, these were CEOs and college-educated people and successful people, and they were really for him. And I think that got lost. And the funny thing was, on election night, I was in Montreal, and I was working, I was doing an event, a huge event, for a guy named Alvin Siegel, who actually makes the suits for Donald Trump. He makes all the Trump suits. He also makes Michael Kors and all these other people. And that night, when the returns were coming in, I was kind of surprised in the beginning of the evening that it hadn't taken off. Like, gee, this is kind of counter to what I had experienced. And then it turned, and then it was like boom, 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 boom. And the states just kept going right down red. And people in the audience, I did one of it in the audience. I had three appearances that night. But I came off the stage and was working the audience as Trump. And people were holding up their iPhones and their smartphones and showing me the maps of the states.
Wow. Wow.
And it was, and that's amazing. Was it. And the next morning, before I went to bed, said he'd won. And then the next morning, I took a photo of off the internet of Bryan Cranston as Walter Wright with stacks of money, and I wrote, "I just won the lottery."
That's true. So you were really, before the election, you were in a unique position because you probably felt like you were in possession of a secret, even though the secret was out in the open.
Yeah. People weren't getting. They just weren't getting it. They just weren't getting it. And so I knew it. I just knew it. And even after the bus thing that happened with Billy Bush,
right.
I would do an event and I would the things that women would whisper in my shocked.
What did they whisper in your ear that is appropriate for radio consumption?
They would say, "Will you grab my blank?"
Oh, okay. Okay.
So they weren't offended by it. And women I spoke to said they thought it was, and these are people at trade shows, and this is very, it was shocking to me because it was counter to what we've been told. But they saw this as a sign of prowess, and he's getting what he wants, and he's a man's man.
Wow.
And I was like, whoa, okay. That's a little different than I was taught in Boy Scouts, but okay.
So generally speaking, when you're in your President Trump character and you're walking down the street, what are people's reactions?
Well, it depends. Prior to the election, it was one thing. Post the election, it's something else. Because prior to the election, a lot of people didn't think he'd win. It was kind of a joke. The Saturday before the election, I did three interviews in Times Square. One was for Japanese television, one was for Australian television, and one was for the BBC, or ITV. And that entire day, just maybe one or two people, and this is Times Square, maybe one or two people had something to say to me negatively. Overwhelmingly, it was positive for Trump. Post the election, there's been a lot more, like, people were upset. They can't believe it. And the very first thing I did post the election, I needed to have two bodyguards.
Wow.
Because we went outside. I live here in Las Vegas, and we went to the Las Vegas sign where we didn't have too much of an issue, but then we went to Fremont Street, and we had people coming right up to me, and these guys knew what to do and how to keep them back, and so I tell my clients now, please, I cannot be in public by myself. You have to have security with me. Even if I'm walking through a hotel lobby, I've got to have someone with me.
Wow.
Because someone tried to choke me on an elevator, so.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Yeah.
For sure.
And I was with, security. Yeah.
Well, you probably,
that was
yeah.
A lot of fun.
Yeah. You usually show business is not that hazardous, but, you know.
Right.
You're,
well, you know, it's
you're
kind of like the old days where people were on soap operas and they actually thought they were the people.
Right, right, right.
You know, this is they, you know, and they don't think I'm Trump. They just think I'm a conduit or this avatar, and they can say or do positive or negative. You know, you're doing a great job. And it's like, thank you. Yeah, I'm doing a tremendous job, absolutely incredible job, I have to tell you.
That's really true. Amazing. That's true. You're like Larry Hagman when he was J.R. Ewing in Dallas.
Right.
You know,
right.
Yeah, when he was walking down the street, people would attack him and say terrible things.
Right, you're horrible.
Yeah. So as an actor, what are the characteristics of President Trump that make him the perfect type of person to impersonate?
Well, my gosh, he's like a dream. He's a dream. And if you put it, you know, he's along the lines of like Bill Clinton. You know, Bill Clinton had this kind of thing. Hey, how you doing? Good to see you. You know, he had an imitatable kind of voice and a way he spoke. Mm-hmm. You know, someone like President Obama, he, you know, here's the deal.
Right.
And he was very kind of guarded and took a long time to answer questions. So you've got, you know, you've got someone very guarded, Trump, and we've all, you know, Trump's been around forever. I mean, I can remember him. I bought The Art of the Deal. I have an original, not original copy, but, the year that it came out.
Wow.
A Christmas gift to me. And wow. I've always been a fan of his. I just find him fascinating because there's so few, you know, when I was a kid growing up, you know, you'd heard about the Rockefellers and the Astors and all these people who, you know, like manifest destiny, who built these fortunes. And you know, at a certain point, as you got to the late 70s and early 80s, who were the iconic business people of the U.S.? And, you know, Donald Trump stepped in and, you know, filled that void by saying, I am. I'm
right.
That guy.
Right.
And, you know, wrote Art of the Deal and all this stuff and, you know, put him on the national stage. And but he himself, his just not even the voice or anything, it's just his personality, this drive to be seen and liked and out there and doing things and accomplishing things, and that, you know, the bravado, that New York part of his personality, well, all of his personality. But then, you know, the voice, the way he speaks. You know, the vocabulary, tremendous, fantastic, incredible, you know, everything's a disaster. It's a disaster. It's an absolute disaster. You know, he's a mess. He's a mess. He's an absolute mess. So he's got a very limited lexicon, but, you know, the way he speaks, I don't know anyone from Queens who speaks like Trump. He's always this brand. He says he's a brand. He is a brand. His hair is a brand. The way he speaks is a brand. His style is his brand. He's very singular in how he is. So that makes him very easy to impersonate. And as you can see, there's this plethora of impersonators popping up left and right.
Right.
My goal is to be accurate. Obviously, to be funny because I'm a comedian, but as an actor, kind of inhibit him and think as him in character, and not so much just do like joke, which a lot of people do. I try to like stay within the confines of how he actually sees the world.
Right. As you mentioned, you're approaching Donald Trump more as an actor as opposed to somebody doing an impression. So physically, how elaborate is it to become President Trump?
Well, I have to grow 6 inches every time I do this, so that's very painful for me. My spine is. You know, it's great being him, and I've said this in other interviews, that I've become more confident playing him because he's so confident. You know, when you play a confident person all the time, it's not like I'm even doing it on stage. I'm interacting with people and saying things I would never usually say. So it's given me a little more confidence. But, you know, my back's straighter. I need to be taller, but I'm also more relaxed. I'm very kind of high-strung. But, you know, Trump walks very slowly. He owns the place when he walks in. You see him walking through like a Ford plant somewhere. It's like he owns the place. He's like he's Ford. walking through. Good to see. When he comes on stage, it's very slow. Yeah, any of the times you've seen any of the stump speeches, just kind of walks right up. He knows everyone's there for him. They're only there for him. They're going to hang on every word. And that's an important part that I have to pull into my performance. Doesn't matter if it takes me 30 minutes to get to the podium. You know, it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter if something doesn't work or if it does work. It's all the same. It's I'm great. I'm fantastic. I'm amazing. I'm amazing. I'm tremendous. No one does it like me. Believe me.
Well, you actually have a Trump wardrobe, and physically you have the accoutrements to become Trump. Tell us about that.
Well, you know, for me, since I was kind of raised in the theater, for me, every authentic is really important, and I had always worked with really custom-made wigs from doing theater and things like that. So when it was time to do, actually going back to other characters, but when it was really time for Trump, I needed a real custom-made human hair wig. So back in 2006, I went to Bob Kelly, who used to do all the wigs for all the Broadway shows, Saturday Night Live, all that. And I went to Bob and I said, Bob, I need a Donald Trump wig. And Bob was very expensive because it was like buying a used car.
Right.
That's how much this wig cost. It was like $6,000-$7,000.
Wow.
And I was like, oh my God, Bob, and because it's 2000, I was like, I can't possibly afford that. And he said, well, you know, I already have a Trump wig made. And I said, why would you have that? And he said, well, they just shot a commercial, a Visa commercial, and Donald Trump is on top of the Chrysler building, and he's showing a Visa card that blows out of his hands, ends up in a dumpster, and I had to build a wig for the body double who went into the dumpster to get the card. I said, wait a minute. I said, this is from the commercial? And he goes, yeah. And I said, okay. And so he put me on a payment plan, and I bought that wig. And subsequently, I've replaced the wig, different times. But, the wig's really, really important. I had a makeup designer do the makeup for me, so we designed the makeup, and then I apply it myself on all these jobs. Then, he always, you can go back 25 years, it's the same look.
Right.
Blue suit, crisp white shirt, cufflinks. And the ties have changed over the years because for a while there in the early seasons of The Apprentice, it was the white collar with the blue shirt.
Right.
So he had that look for quite a while, but now it's a solid white shirt. So I've got about five really high-end, very expensive, French cuff shirts. I've got four suits. So all the suits, whenever I have to do a quick turnaround, pack them up. I've got four wigs now, so I can turn those around because if I can only get a few wearings out of them before they need to go back to my wig person who washes and styles them, because once there's a lot of product in them, they don't look as real. They always look real, but I like that fresh look that, like, Trump sometimes looks like he's just walked out of the shower,
right,
styled his hair, and done a press conference.
And I assume you wear Trump ties, of course.
I was for the longest time. I was wearing Trump ties, and they're harder to get now because,
yeah,
Macy's, terrible people at Macy's, they discontinued my ties. So I don't, So I, if I can find them online, I get them online. But what happens is, performing all the time in makeup, I've ruined so many of these ties. So, but they were, in all actuality, the Trump ties are very good ties. They're extra long.
Right.
Which he always does. His goes down below his belt, and they're really well made ties. They're heavy ties.
And he never buttons his jacket.
He does not, and
yeah,
I got called on that because for me, my own self, I try to keep the coat open, which he does and has always done. But every now and then, I'll just out of habit, I might button it. I haven't done it for a while now, but people right away when I post something, they're like, you buttoned your jacket. Trump doesn't button his jacket. And oh, my Lord. Okay. Sorry. Oh, yeah. Yeah. And for the most part, everyone likes my stuff. And I've always tried to be very middle of the road as far as I don't want to bash him, and I don't want to be on either side. And when I say middle of the road, I mean politically. I want to do satire, and I want it to be funny, but I don't see any reason to bash him. And that's why I've been lucky enough to work on, be on Fox 40 times and to do something like Chelsea Handler. And you want to talk about both sides of the political spectrum. That's pretty much it right there.
Well, also, that's very smart. That's very old school, because back in the day, you know, comedians, they did comedy right down the middle. So they didn't they didn't alienate half their audience.
Right. And, you know, back in the day, you know, when I was a kid, you know, people didn't wear their political affiliations on their sleeves.
Right.
All this political talk every day and every night, and then with the advent of Facebook and everyone posting stuff that's, you know, real news, fake news, their opinion, this thing, that thing. I always tell people, like, you're not going to change anybody's mind.
Right.
You're not going to change anybody. Don't just put up your, you know, you skiing in the Bahamas or something, because political stuff just is just divisive. It's just divisive by nature.
Yeah, the only thing that happens is you change their minds about you sometimes.
Exactly. Yeah.
So
it's the truth. You know?
Now, I know that he's a very, very busy man, but could I possibly ask President Trump a few questions?
Sure. Hold on 1 second. Donnie, Jackson, would you mind getting on? He loves it when I call him Donnie. Oh, here he is. Hello, who's this?
Mr. President, this is Jim Benson. It's an honor having you aboard
Jim
the TV time machine.
No. This isn't Jim Benson with CNN. That's fake news. Fake news.
No.
Is that Jim Benson?
No.
Tell Don Lemon he's a dummy. A dummy. And Chris Cuomo, he's like a jade lunatic.
Now, of course, the big news is your firing of FBI Director James Comey. What made you decide to fire him so abruptly at this time?
Well, I have to tell you. A lot of people know this, but an hour before I fired Comey, the ratings came in, and every time he was on camera, the ratings dropped. Sad, okay? Job one is keeping the ratings up. And by the way, the new acting director, great numbers. Right out of the box. And I want to let you know that by firing Comey, it frees him up to come back for the season finale
right.
to help another contestant, and then the ratings will be huge and everyone will be happy. You'll thank me. Don't worry. I know what I'm doing. I'm tremendous.
Now, some of your critics say that you...
I don't have any critics. What critics? Everyone loves me.
Yeah, a few people.
Right.
They say that you were in a rush to fire Comey. So was it a rush decision? Do you deny that there was a Russian factor?
There was no Russian factor. Listen. All I was doing was helping out my friend Hillary Clinton. As you know, she was at my wedding.
Right.
You know that, right?
That's right.
There was a famous photo. I mean, I didn't invite her. She crashed. It was terrible. She completed the centerpieces, filled Ziploc bags of food, which is horrible. Very cheap people, the Clintons. But I didn't rush to fire Comey. Do you remember that crying Schumer?
That's
said,
right.
Didn't he say we should fire Comey? Right?
Right.
Didn't everyone, Pelosi, Goofy Elizabeth Warren, who I call Pocahontas, and everyone gets upset when I call her Pocahontas. You know what, though? I think it's a compliment. Because when I call Elizabeth Warren Pocahontas, she goes from being a 5 to a 7. Automatically. She should be thanking me. Believe me. But it wasn't a rush. I've heard all these people. I was trying to do what they wanted. You see that?
Right.
I'm being very good. I'm being very judicious. I just learned this word, judicious. Very important word. And I think, you know, Comey being fired. And by the way, I am 6'3". Do you know how tall Comey is?
Taller than that.
He is 6'8". He's 6'8".
Wow.
No one should be taller than me. No one.
That's
no
true.
One. He's too tall. I actually call him Too Tall Comey. So he's out on the height, and so I can have him back. It's going to be great. The ratings for the season finale is going to be tremendous. And Ivanka is going to co-host it with me live from New York from Trump Tower.
Well, also, did you fire Comey because you just missed saying you're fired?
Absolutely. Who have I fired so far?
Right.
Who have I fired? Right? Michael Flynn didn't even give me the opportunity to write a resignation letter. I mean, Sean Spicer wrote it, but he had a sign.
Now, as president, you now fly in Air Force One. So how does flying in Air Force One compare to flying in your luxury Trump jet?
It's a dump. It's a dump. It's a terrible plane. It's about 100 years old. I think the Wright brothers built this thing. The Wi-Fi's horrible. I can't tweet half the time because it's like it's insulated with steel or lead or something. I don't like it, but I do like the desk. I like the desk. It's a very nice desk. But I have a desk on mine. You know what I love doing on my planes? Eating Kentucky Fried Chicken. I love eating and flying. I love eating, flying, and tweeting. And saluting. No one salutes like me. No one salutes. I'm such a tremendous saluter. And touring. They're my four favorite things. Tweeting, touring, saluting, presidenting. I'm so good at it. I'm so good. So easy, but yet so complicated.
Well, with all these distractions lately, do you feel that you're still on track to make America great again?
It's already great. It's already great. As soon as I became the official nominee, America became great again. And then we times that by two when I won the election. Then we times that by four when I was inaugurated. By the way, single largest inauguration in the history of inaugurations. I have the paperwork right here. They said over 8 billion people. And 8 billion to the entire planet came to my inauguration.
That's amazing.
I don't even know how they did that, but they were there. They were there.
Well, Mr. President, I know you're a busy man. Thank you for your time. And thank you again for coming aboard the TV Time Machine.
Fantastic. Thank you so much, fake news, Mr. Benson.
Now, John, you're also now a regular, pretty much, on Conan O'Brien. Tell us about that.
Yes, I've been on since August of 2015, and it's just been an absolute dream come true because, you know, I'm a big Ernie Kovacs fan.
Very good.
And
very good.
I think out of all of the late night talk show hosts that Conan is the most innovative comedically.
Right.
He's just done so many amazing things and introduced so many characters, and he's not afraid to do anything, and he gets out there. And I'm so grateful to be part of, you know, the Team Coco family. And last summer I got to be on stage with him a couple of times doing Captain Make America Great Again at Comic-Con. And they call me, and I come running, and I do the recordings. I lost track of how many Trump-Obama phone calls we did.
Right.
We did so many. I literally lost track. And now we're doing Trump-Putin phone calls.
That's great. And also the Civil War skit.
We've done a bunch of those kind of standalone pieces. So there's been a lot of those, and it's just been great. I mean, I just feel so blessed. You know, I've been a working actor for 25, 26 years now, and to be in the right place at the right time and to work on, like, you know, well-known shows, to have Conan, to have this continuing relationship with Conan, and to have the, you know, the chance to work on Chelsea Handler. And I just shot a movie over in England, which I'm really looking forward to. I can't talk about it because we're kind of under embargo, but it'll be you know, it's like a legit feature, and I'm in character as Trump. So
awesome.
Very exciting. Yeah. And I did a web series, too, last summer. It's very exciting.
Now, recently you were also voted the number one Trump impersonator. How did that come about?
The Laugh Factory, they announced it. It was in The Hollywood Reporter and Variety and a bunch of other news outlets. And I happened to get emails from those folks every day, but a bunch of people started sending me. I was like, holy cow, like, I need to be a part of this. So they said, you know, all you have to do is tweet to laughfactory.com, hashtag Donald Trump impression. And I've done so many things between TV appearances and commercials and corporate and this thing. And I had just so much material. So I just started tweeting away. And they called me and said, hey, round one's in New York, and you're one of the three people. And then I won that, which guaranteed me a place in L.A. And then I won that, which is really, again, incredibly exciting, amazingly gratifying. You know, I worked as a stand-up for a number of years, so to kind of be coming back around and to know that I'll be doing, you know, stand-up again at comedy clubs and to be doing this Real News Fake News show is just, it's incredible. I mean, all of this has been amazing.
Well, another amazing thing is you also now share something in common with President Trump because you have the chance to earn a little gold. Tell us about that.
This is very exciting. Last summer I shot a commercial through a friend of mine, and he said, we have a concept, and you're the only person I know who does so many characters and does them full on. And he said, it's for a new mobile phone company, and we want you to do it just a bunch of different characters, like six different characters, and Trump being the last character in the lineup because their tagline was making mobile communications great again, making communication great again. And we shot the commercial, and he said, hey, this commercial is getting some traction. I'm going to submit it for an Emmy. And I said, great. And he says, you need to join in the Boston market. So if we do win, you can get the award. I said, oh, absolutely. And from what I understand, hundreds of commercials were submitted, and we were one of the five nominated.
So ultimately, how has playing Donald Trump and the election of President Trump changed your life?
It has absolutely changed my life in every conceivable way. As an actor, you're a jobber. You're always looking for the next job, and as you get older, there's less and less work, and everyone knows it, and it's even for comedians, because everybody wants everyone to be younger and younger and younger. For me to have somebody who's actually older than me, and I can play this character, and he's not going anywhere.
Right.
He's going to be around. And people would say to me, "Well, what's going to happen if he loses?" I'm like, "Doesn't matter. He's never going to shut up. He just can't help himself." So it's really changed my life because for the first time I've been, I'm on my feet financially because actors are, you're always kind of broke.
Right.
So, you're in good shape financially. Last year I did over 250 interviews, and that's like the New York Times, the Washington Post, Politico. I was on the front page of the entertainment section here in Las Vegas, in the Las Vegas Review Journal.
Wow.
Two full pages. So it's changed my life to the point where I'm living the dream I had as a kid. I've always wanted to be an actor. It's all I've ever wanted to do was get up and entertain people and be funny, and I am in that position where I'm doing that on a daily basis, and I'm recognized for what I do, which anybody would want. It doesn't matter if you're an accountant, to be recognized in your industry and beyond is just it's just a blessing. It's just such an amazing thing.
And this is really bigly for you, obviously.
Bigly, huge, tremendously huge. And now the goal is to kind of take the Trump momentum and get back to acting. And, the last actor thing will help me get back to being in stand-up. And then hopefully just kind of have a nice long career, over the next 35, 40 years.
And, John, where can people find out more about yourself online?
They can go to johnnyd.net, johnnyd.net, or they can go to, that's the best place overall, but also you can find me on Facebook. I have fan pages, and I'm on the Twitter at johnnyd23, and that's also on Instagram. So I'm pretty much as it is nowadays, I'm part of the whole social media world, as you have to be. But it kind of works for somebody like me who does a lot of characters.
John, it's been a tremendous pleasure having you aboard
tremendous,
the TV Time Machine. That's right.
Really incredible. No one gives interviews like me. No one, I have to tell you.
Feel free to join us again in the future or in the past.
Absolutely. Or the past. Okay. We can go back to old Trump. Thanks, Jim. Great being on the show.